Hi, this is Andre.
And in case you somehow don't know, I wanted to pop in and tell you that we are hosting a live episode taping of the Narrator Roundtable. It's going to be on April 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can stop by our Instagram and grab the link in bio for the live event. Just hop on at April 24th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and what are we going to do? For one, returning from our 2022 PANA pilot, we're going to have guest host Mark Sanderlin, and we're going to hear all about what's changed for him over the years. We're also going to be reflecting on our first 10 episodes, over 1,000 minutes of the Narrator Roundtable, and hearing perspectives from core hosts who didn't make it to those episodes. What did Lindsay think about the Joel Frumkin episode? What did Gail think about the Deep D episode? Deanna on Jillian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So much to reflect on, and it's going to be a jam. Plus, I'm not going to forget about you. We're doing some audience engagement, and we're going to hear from our live audience about what struck you this season, what you've learned along with us, questions you still have, and it's just going to be a treat. So once again, head over to our Instagram, save the link in bio for the live episode, and join us on April 24th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I hope you know as well as I do that we couldn't do this without the love and support that y'all have shown for the roundtable. So thank you for listening.
Graves. Joining us today, we have a few of my co-hosts. Hi, Andre. How are you?
Hey, chilling.
And we also have with us Lindsay Dorcas. Hi, Lindsay. How's your day going?
Hey, Kurt. It's going well. Listen, better now that I'm hanging out with y'all.
We're going to have fun. And newly minted Audi Award winner, Gail Shallon, is in the room. Hi, Gail.
Hello. So glad to see you all.
Now, how do you record a podcast as an Audi Award winner?
Literally, I watched Deep D's episode and now I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to do this anymore. Just kidding.
Well, I'm going to jump right into today's topic. Since I started narrating, 95% of my work has been in romance. That's a number I made up, but it's very high. And an even higher percentage of my romance work has been in gay romance. I have voiced hundreds of leading men, and as Joel Frumkin alluded to in our first episode, audiences have certain expectations for the voice of a leading man in romance. And that voice is not grown-up, musical theater-obsessed show choir kid from the Midwest. Here is how those voices are usually described. Deep. Gruff. Gravelly. Throaty. Smoky. Rumbling, husky, hoarse, booming, commanding, hard, resonant, and so low you can feel it in your bones. Your bones. And for years, I put my vocal cords through their paces, trying to match those descriptions and what I thought were the reader's expectations. I would end a day of recording with no voice. I would wear myself out in only a couple of days trying to do my best James Earl Jones impression. And the results were, at best, mixed. It wasn't good, and it wasn't sustainable. But because I kept doing it, I kept being offered that work. So it was a cycle that I had to consciously break out of. As narrators, one of the hardest parts of finding success in the industry is discovering our unique voice. And for us, the word voice can be used literally and metaphorically. What do I sound like, and what do I want to say through my work? How much of myself can I bring to each story? Is there an audience for someone who sounds like me? So joining us today to discuss finding your voice as a narrator is Jillian Williams. Jillian, welcome to the Narrator Roundtable.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and apparently I am truly moving in high cotton. There are some very talented people here. Not sure I'm grown enough for this conversation, but let's go.
Take up your space, girl.
Yeah.
Right. Jillian has a diverse professional and performance background, including 20 plus years as a human resource professional, some time as a stand-up, and as the host of an online radio show. I first got to meet her at APAC in 2023, where her glasses game put mine to shame, as it is doing tonight. And that is saying something. And I have since had the pleasure of witnessing her perform. And let me tell you, her glasses aren't the only thing bold and fabulous that Jillian brings to the table.
You are too kind.
I'm too actually kind. Not. Get to know me.
No comment.
We pretend for company.
Yeah, yeah, right. This. Everybody else, shut up. The people who know me, be quiet. So today we're talking about finding your voice, which is a topic that came up because Jillian and I were in a class together and we were just kind of like chatting on the side, as I'm sure people do, or we were being naughty and doing
ones.
It anyways.
Right.
Either way. And it was something that came up really from your perspective and something I had sort of forgotten about going through that back in the day. And yet it really is sort of a never-ending process, this idea of finding our voice, mm-hmm. especially for newer narrators and especially for minority narrators.
Indeed.
So do you want to just kick us off by telling me a little bit more about like where you're at with that now and how you're feeling since we had that conversation a couple months ago?
You know, I think I have a little more confidence about wherever it may land or wherever it ends up. I think one of the things that was said to me, and it may have been from Joel Fromkin, that is, was that there is room for all types of voices and everyone's voice. And you don't do the industry, the characters, the stories, any service by trying to sound like someone else. There is already that person filling those shoes and doing that thing. And if you don't allow yourself to be authentic and kind of shake out who you are, then there are characters that aren't going to get the right voice. But it is hard being a minority, being a Black woman, being a human being, period, right? Because we all have identities that fall in what some people may call a marginalized community, so to speak, or we're not the center. And so there's all the tapes and the noise that you hear about this is how you should sound. That is how an authentic somebody sounds. You know, we had that conversation when she asked about Black voices and characters and things of that sort. You know, one of the things I said was, we're not a monolith, and we are not. I can't give you a whole book of the quintessential, stereotypical Chatalakwa. I can't give you that. I can give you 2 or 3 minutes of that because there is some Chatalakwa in me. But that's not, and there's no shade against anyone that can give that to you. I cannot. But that doesn't make me non-authentic as a Black woman because I can't give you some Shaniqua for a long period of time. There is someone that can give you that, and she needs to work too. It's still, you know, you still hear the tapes. It's still hard to put them on pause or throw them away.
Yeah.
Just me? No?
No, it's not just you. There's two ways this hits me. One is in the exact same way. Like I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I sound the way I sound. We talked a little bit about this in our first episode. But like I've been asked to do something a little different. Like I've been asked to like put something on that isn't normally there, and I can do it, but somebody else could do it better for sure, right? And I feel one thing for me that keeps coming up personally is, I'm 26 years old, but I don't know how this works. Is my voice a tenor or something? It's a little higher. Like I don't have like a deep rumbly voice or whatever. I also don't sound like a middle-aged man. And sometimes the books that I'm really interested in doing that might be in like the literary fiction space, they are often narrated by people who sound like they're 45 and they're, you know, reading this thing to you. And I don't always, especially when I feel my authentic connection to the text, I don't always bring that energy to it, right? And it's hard to find the balance of like, sure, we can come to a book in dialect, we can come to a book with this specific approach, but what's the difference between finding your connection to the text and having your interpretation of it versus putting on what you think this book is supposed to sound like, or what you think people are expecting from you, or how you think Emily Wu Zeller would do it. I feel like I always say her name. I love Emily. Like, it's this weird balance, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the point you brought up about if another person's voice is the best voice for that story, they're going to hire them, and they're not going to hire an imitation of them. Right? Because I feel like this is a trap that it's so easy to fall into as a new narrator, especially if you've like listened to a lot of audiobooks and you have your preferences on like which narrators you love. It's so easy to be like, ooh, I want to sound like January Lavoie. I want to sound like Emily Wu Zeller. I want to sound like Julia Whalen. Like, and to pick up on like cadences or tone and try to mimic that because it's what you enjoy, or it's what you hear as like the standard or a good narrator. But it's like, if that's a January Lavoie book, they're going to hire her because she exists and she's working, right? Like they, so what you, you know, what you need to try to do then or be like, but I want to narrate the Lindsay Dorcas books. You want to narrate the Gillian Williams books. Like if you can find that, it's difficult. It can be difficult, but if you can find like your authentic narrator self, then you know you can find the books that are right for you and not right for like some other ideal you have in your mind.
Can we talk about that though, like how you find yourself? Like I guess to me, like the thought that is coming to mind is, Andre, you said something on one of our episodes about you're the anthology of all the people you've ever met or something beautiful like that. And you, like truly poetic. And like, you know, that is what we are. We're this amalgamation of all the experiences and humans we've encountered and sounds we've heard and voices we've heard. And we're actors. So like, we aren't the characters we're playing. We aren't the voice that we're reading, but our job is to step into that. And I can imagine without books and books of experience, which maybe that's just the way you figure it out. You know, you're sitting there going, I don't know what I sound like. Who am I? Like, I am this sort of mix of all these things. And where is me? And, oh no, am I sounding too much like January or Emily or whatever? You know, like I would get really caught in my head asking that question. So does anybody else have like thoughts or tips on like how to find that you?
I will say too, in addition to that, part of it is like, and this is something that I've been really cognizant of lately, is that like it, you are you in every book, but also like you said, you are the version of you that that book demands. Like my and the text will lead you there, but like my rom-com self is very different from like my horror self, and it's not like I'm being inauthentic by accessing a different part of who I am with every book, because I think that I do. I think we all do. I think it's like a little sliver of who we are.
Yeah, sometimes I panic when a producer will offer me a job without an audition because I'm like, which version of me are you casting? I don't know.
Yeah, what sample did you listen to?
Right.
That would be really interesting if we all just started asking that
sometimes
question.
Sometimes I do. Yeah.
Which version of me?
Yeah.
Like what is it that made you think of me for this? Because most of the time I'm just fucking grateful.
Yeah.
And I don't want to question it. No.
Jillian, just keep shooting in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Jillian, what has your journey been like finding your authentic voice as a narrator?
Honestly, it really has been in being vulnerable in places and spaces with other narrators. And even in coaching. And I think it has been with me being honest with this is where I am and this is how I'm feeling. Not necessarily that it's about cultivating a bunch of, oh, no, you're great. You're fabulous. You'll be good. Just keep it. Just keep going. It really has been about cracking myself open. And it's the things that we all say, right? I experience imposter syndrome. Am I really as talented as I think I am? This is not, I do not want to show up like American Idol. And it's like, baby, your mother should have told you, you can't sing. Really? Why? No, it's a no, it's a hard no, it's a hell no kind of thing.
Yeah, so, especially when we're working in a vacuum, right? Like, especially when there is no feedback. So you're like, I don't know, maybe I suck. Part, yeah.
That part. And in this journey as well, it's been also me trying to connect with me. And I'm in my mid-50s. So it's all of those things, right? And as I age and as I change and as I learn and as I grow and as I make authentic connections, those things are helping me kind of center myself. I don't know if I answered your question, but that really has been the thing, because this is a lonely, solitary thing that we do in this box. Mm-hmm. There's just me. And trying to love myself enough to cut myself some slack that it may not be as bad as I think it is. That, you know, someone else booked me because obviously they saw something. So let's lean to trying to give them what it is they saw, but still being authentic and it being my voice. But also all the other things, right? Paying attention to what is the text telling me, who this person is, connecting with that, what is appropriate in those choices based on what the text is telling me. But there still is some flavor and room and space for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jillian, you're reminding me that my earrings for tonight are Toni Morrison with a little quote that says, "You are your best thing."
Oh, wow.
And so I hope you remember that, Jillian.
I am going to.
But so there's two things I think about here that really feel like an extension of that. One was, I remember like back in my very first days of audiobooks, when I was auditioning on ACX all the time, the first thing that felt like a practice of like shooting down onto what am I, what's my relationship to this, was giving myself permission to not audition for every single thing. Mm. Being like, I'm going to read this, I'm going to feel what I feel about this, and I'm going to decide. It doesn't have to be that I'm going after everything. I don't have to be everyone's everything. Mm. Because I think you know you have the answer to that question when someone sends you a project and it's not the rate, it's not the company, it's not anything except for your connection to the, not even the quality, but like what the material of the book is, where you say, I'm going to pass on this one. This one isn't for me. That feels like a kind of litmus for when you have that like sense. And I remember like not telling myself like, oh, you don't have to audition for everything. And suddenly it felt like, one, more time, right? Like you're not spread as thin across everything. Mm-hmm. And two, when you're thinking about that context of like, yeah, like what is your connection? I'm here, you're there. What are you trying to accomplish? You get to lean in. You get to make choices and adjustments, as opposed to, I feel like I constantly have a fear of like, had this voice in my head early on being like, okay, now it's this one. And so like, oh, what are they looking for? How can I, maybe I'll get here to do that. And then, duh. And then, this one, what am I looking? And there's no sense of like, what do I want my mark on this work to be when I was hopping through like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like the other thing that I think about so much, especially when I started coaching with people, is you'd hear someone, particularly like a brand new narrator, read. And, you know, you don't just show up in like a Zoom room and then like they start reading. Like you speak with the person first, right? Mm-hmm. And so they finish reading, and I feel like I frequently say, like, I just heard you speak to me, and then I just heard you read. And they don't have to be the same thing, but I want to know if you know why those two things sound so different from one another. Because I think you should make a choice about that difference, and I don't know that you're making a choice about that difference right now. But I wonder, how do y'all feel like you've gone that granular? I feel like that's what we do with coaching, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a difficult transition to make, I think, too, because you are reading And you do have this dense wall of text in front of you. So that's where the technique and the skill comes in, is to say, because when you're speaking in your own words, of course you sound like yourself. And it can be hard to take that same quality and transmute it into text that you did not write, that is not in your quote unquote voice. That is like that. Then there's a lot of it, right? It's different from other forms of acting where, you know, even in a 3-hour play or a 3-hour movie, you have so much less text to perform than in a 10-hour book that you're doing by yourself. Like, it's a lot. And so I think that's part of the practice and the technique and the joy of the work, is finding a way to make, like with all acting, finding text that is, that you didn't write, that is setting out a set of circumstances that you're not actually living, and like finding a way to crawl inside and live there in a way that feels authentic. Yeah. And I just think that that's, for me, part of that is finding my curiosity about it and finding my sense of play. Because sometimes, again, it can be like, we can get so caught up in what we sound like and like, ooh, does my voice sound smooth? Does my voice sound beautiful? Does my voice sound soothing? But that's not necessarily interesting. And I think the sense of play comes in where it's like, what if I said it like this? What if I tried it like that? What if I sped this up or slowed this down? What if I put a breath there where you wouldn't expect it instead of there? Like finding ways to experiment and play. And then hopefully that play leads to something that feels really good or feels like, ooh, yeah, that is how I would say that sentence, you know, like, mm-hmm. even if it's not how everyone else would say it. Or being curious about, like, who am I talking to? What do I want the listener to hear in this? Like, when I'm, what am I seeing as this character? What am I experiencing? What questions am I asking? Like, that is something I constantly come back to whenever there's a question in the text. Be like, just ask the question. You know, really ask it and be curious about the answer. Even if it's rhetorical, like ask the question for real, you know, which can be so hard to remember to do in the moment, at least for me sometimes.
Right.
I want to go back just a little bit to something Andre was saying, because Jillian, I want your perspective on this. Like I've done a few of those open studio classes where you do listen to other people read and you get to sometimes give a little bit of feedback, but I often am thinking exactly what you said, which is like, I got to hear, like, you were just talking and like you were delightful and lovely and engaging. And then like some other thing happened when it came time to read. And it was, and the question is always like, why do we feel we have to put on that artifice? And I'd like us to explore that a little bit. But the interesting thing, you know, Jillian and I took a class, she alluded to it already, that was about Black voices in audiobooks. I came into it as a white person who sometimes has to perform Black characters and wanted the experience of like getting some feedback. But there were also a lot of Black actors in the class there to learn about audiobooks. And I feel like of all the classes I've taken, that phenomenon that you described, Andre, happened the most in that class. Where it seemed anecdotally from my perspective as I'm watching people that Black actors felt they had to change how they spoke to read an audiobook.
And that is crazy? Valid. No, you absolutely are not. That is absolutely valid. And that just comes from the reality of being a Black person and having to code switch and trying to make sure you have what you think is mass appeal, right? Mm-hmm. Because you want to book the work. And so it does turn into that. And the other part too is we've all been raised very differently. So Roy and Dorothy were not having me come home and not speak the Queen's English. It was coming out, you know, the way it was written. It just was. And my family's filled with public speakers and actors and things of that sort. And so there's going to be crisp words with all the consonants and everything in it. And so, but then when I'm with my girls, there is something different because I'm going to talk about the piece that I performed. Because what was the note that I got, right? That note was, I needed to deliver it more like I was talking to my friends, which was difficult for me. Not really difficult, but it did require a different thought process, right? Because I'm thinking that's not appropriate. But it was absolutely appropriate, but it was work for me to move to delivering it that way. Because when I close this door, I need to make sure all the consonants are there. The word is and, not an. The word is ask, not ax. So it, for me, the thing is that if I give it like I'm speaking to my friends, then there are lots of pickups because I am going to drop the D because that is not how I say it to my friends. And the word is her. But from friend to friend, it's pronounced huh. I told her to go sit down. But that is not how it is written. So the quandary is to tell a story like Jillian, but also to give the author's words and how they are written the respect they deserve. So I think for a lot of Black actors, just people period, right? But we're talking about being African-American or Black and being in this industry, it can be particularly difficult because everything you have heard from the time you were born was you're not good enough, you aren't intelligent, and when someone calls you articulate, it's sometimes said as a put down. Mm-hmm. He's well spoken, as if that's a surprise. Oftentimes, sometimes in my professional universe, when I deliver my point of view with passion and well thought out, so on and so forth, the assumption is that I'm angry. And I'm like, I don't give enough of a damn to be angry. I'm just representing myself as an intelligent individual. So let's stop with always coloring everything I say. Because I care and it has passion and I'm delivering it with belief that I'm angry. Mm-hmm. So it's all those labels that continue to get tossed around and I have to shake those off myself. I have to shake it off and say, it's okay. I am enough. And that is probably a statement I probably need to write in here somewhere because I cried in one of Joel's classes. Because he told me that, and I'm going to get choked up now, because he said that. He says, I don't know why you show up and give me milk toast. He says, I want to hear Jillian tell me a story. I want to hear Jillian tell me a story, and that is not Jillian telling me a story. And so it's hard to remind yourself in this climate that I'm enough. I'm enough. There's room and space for me. I'm enough. It's okay. Yeah. I don't know, Andre. You
are your best thing, girl. Mm-hmm. And this is so real. And I had such a deep, insightful thought that has just drifted away like the last train at midnight. No, it's not you. It's me. I could have written it down. I have resources. Gail, you look like you have a thought.
Yeah, I have a thought. What this is making me think, because I was like, okay, well, our job is to meet the text, right? To come from where we start and then go meet the text, meet the character that we are, mainly voicing, meet the author's voice, go to it. But what I hear you saying is maybe the approach can be, can I bring this text to me? Can I make this character meet me somewhere that feels real? And if I can do that, it doesn't need to be where I live all the time, but it has come to me in a place that feels like I can own it and I am enough. And that's the approach rather than the other way, if that makes sense. You know, because I guess this is an acting job to me. And my thought is like, okay, my job, the way I get direction on what I'm supposed to do is I read this book and it tells me where I'm supposed to go, what the world I'm supposed to be in is, you know, where it intercepts with who I naturally walk through this world as every day and where I kind of need to stretch a little further and what version of me, like Lindsay was saying, I need to bring. But I think it's a really interesting reversal of that to be like, can I coax this thing to come to me? Which is also very of our genre, right? There's There's something about telling that one person a story, telling that friend a story, that's an invitation rather than like performance, if that makes sense, in terms of outward energy versus inward. So I like that. Thanks for that reframing. Huh.
An invitation rather than a performance.
I think that's the authenticity probably that we need to lend to it. So I was at a narrator retreat last year, and this may speak to what you asked. So there is one piece that I performed, and in it, she talks about her husband cheating. And she also deals with how she feels about that. I played it with a little more humor. And so in one of the sessions that I was in, one of two female coaches were there. And, you know, they gave me some feedback. But there was another narrator that was there. She does a lot of DEI work and she's a sweetheart. Bless her heart. She is a sweetheart. She was angry over the fact that she felt like the notes that I received would not allow me, if I wanted to make a choice, play the character being angry. And she said afterwards, I mean, it was a 15, 20 minute hour long. And I just had to say, I'm tired. Please, can we not talk about this anymore? Wow. She felt as if I had been forced to make that choice because her words, because there's a bunch of white people in this room and we would be uncomfortable with your anger as a Black woman. The character is Black. She happened to be married to a white police officer. And I felt some kind of way because I never thought that I was being forced to make a choice or that my choice couldn't be to play her angry. But I thought a more nuanced, better choice was to give her feelings and words some levity, but still, you still got the meaning of how she felt as an undercurrent, and that I didn't lead with the anger because I think the anger would have been suspected. And in normal, when I originally started performing it, I did perform it angry because I drew from my own relationship, you know, betrayals and that type of thing. But I thought it was a more nuanced performance because I didn't play angry, because that would have been obvious and the easiest thing to do. And I still have had conversations about her indignation about feeling that I had been forced to make a choice, she thought, to make all of the white people in the audience comfortable. And now I don't know why I said all that, but I feel like there's something.
I'm glad you did.
It's
I was gonna say like that.
It's tied into Gail's point.
You're making acting choices. And you have agency and you're bringing this piece to you from where you see it from a creative perspective. And I feel like, you know, it is really interesting what we place on other people about their choices because we don't know. Is the performance ringing true? That's all we know as the audience.
Yeah. And that's a lot of weight to bring it. What you just described is a lot of like those expectations are there and they have weight and we can bring that into the booth with us very easily.
Yeah.
I mean, because in addition to like our own experience with narration and our own voice and like what feels natural, there's like, well, if I make this choice, will people feel this way about it? If I make that choice, will people feel that way? Like it can be, that's a loud chorus to have in your head when you're trying to work. So I imagine like that's, and I imagine for a lot of people, they're bringing even more voices in than I can imagine into the booth with them.
This work too, like, that sort of feedback or criticism, because the work that we do is so personal and we do bring so much of ourselves to it, sometimes it doesn't feel like a criticism of the work. It feels like a criticism of who we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love, just like Gail said, that felt, when you particularly mentioned about that piece you read, Jillian, that you connected it to your own personal experience and that like was the lens you interpreted the read through. That feels like, Gail, your application of what you're saying, like bringing the text to us. You'd think we're sponsored because I'm about to mention Joel again. But one of the things he Joel said stands. To me,
we're just a fan club. That's all.
Where's my hat? One of the things he said to me early on too was he'd given me this piece to do in class. It was really the text itself was depressing, and I read it from that point of sadness, and he invited me to read it from a point of levity, to find a kind of like jaded humor in the text. And I ultimately went and listened on Audible, and that I hadn't listened first. That was how it was ultimately performed, was this kind of like sardonic kind of humorous approach to the text. And so I think a lot about emotional levity, because for me, when I see, like, especially in YA, like when I see that emotion on the page, as I know in my arsenal that like my interpretation isn't always to do this kind of like flow over the head, this like, you know, second location approach to like the emotional interpretation. Like I did a book last year where there was just a cascade of anger for a page. There, it felt like there was no other approach to it. And that was what like felt honest to my performance of it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, you were talking about like talking to your friends, and you'd get pickups if you really spoke the way that you spoke to your friends. I've also been thinking about this since like the fall. I did a book where Gabra Zachman directed me. Goddess, amazing work. If you're out there, Gabra. Yeah,
this is also a Gabra fan club.
Yes, yes. And
okay, well, obviously I need to get a membership. I don't know her.
Get in the club. So, it is worth it.
Thank you. Making a notation. Send me her name. I want to spell it correctly.
Will do.
We did this book where the author had a favorite phrase. I know authors have favorite phrases all the time, but the author would do like blank and blank and blank. That would happen a lot throughout the book. Mm-hmm. And so as it was happening, Gabra would stop me and be like, don't enunciate the and. When we say that in real life, we don't say like this and that. You say this and that. I don't want to hear that D. And so she gave me that permission as the director to like let it slide. Like it wasn't it wasn't a listening library title. We didn't have to be word perfect. And since then, I've been thinking a lot more and more, especially in the world of AI, about like what these human and real touches feel like in performances. And it feels so much often like permission to bring you into the performance, and permission to bring like your experiences and interpretations into the performance. I've been carrying flowers for my co-narrator on a title called Stars in Your Eyes, and he does mostly video games, animation, other work, and then does audiobooks sometimes. And when I listened to his part, he would literally like do efforts in the audiobook. Like he'd say, like, I stopped and took a deep breath. And like it was lived in all the way through. And I loved experiencing that. I loved hearing people like sob with no text behind it. I loved hearing like kisses blown, whatever it was. And I feel like there has to be room for play with that. I know that we can't get away with it in every book, but I wonder for you, Jillian, right? Like in this example, like, how much more would the listener love those scenes if you really did just talk like you spoke to your friends? You know, how much more would you love that performance?
Right, right. And then being prepared to defend the choices, because I narrated a romance and the word is spelled B-O-W-L-E-G-G-E-D. Black people say bow-legged. We don't say bow-legged. We say bow-legged. And then it usually comes with a girl. He is bow-legged. Okay. kind of thing. And so, of course, I said it how we say it. And then, of course, it was a note. And then I wasn't at a place where I could, like, defend it and say, well, you know, she's melanated like me. And if she said it, she said bow-legged. She didn't say bow-legged. But okay, pick up. You got it. I'll get it back to you shortly. Mm. You know, and it is, and I think I narrated something a little, I picked up on ACX. Oftentimes, just to get back in the frame of mind, I may find something, a little quick read that something that I read, because I read a lot myself, because I'm a reader, always have been. And so I played much more with my delivery. What if there were exhales and kind of things, I infused that in the narration, and it felt authentic, and it felt real, and it felt like I had connected to the story, and it did feel more like me telling a story, and I felt more like I had inhabited the characters. So I've read some of the reviews. Nobody pointed that out, but I think we probably, as narrators, should move more in that direction, because that does pull me into the story, and I feel there, and like I'm watching these characters talk to each other and you know, argue with each other and make love to each other and do other things with each other. So I think there is value in that. So I would agree. Mm-hmm. I would agree. And I bet it's probably amazing.
Yeah, but you're right. It can be a tough tightrope to walk, that authenticity, but also not getting too many pickups because of pronunciation. And like you said, you know, it's tricky because, like, maybe your proofer is not as familiar, like, you know, is not as familiar with the culture or the story you're telling or the way of speaking you have, and is like going by the book. And it can be tough to push back and be like, no, I made this choice on purpose. And you know, and but even stuff that happens not on purpose. I got a pickup packet recently that was like 80% of my notes were about my New England accent, unintentional New England accent. Like, just me reading in my quote unquote neutral voice, but like, and I feel like every year I learn like new words that I say wrong or differently I didn't know about. I say forward, I don't say forward, you know, and that was a big one. Every time I said forward, they were like forward, forward. And I went back and I fixed them because, you know, sure, but it did, you know, things that had never even occurred to me that I was saying them the non-standard way. But it's just interesting to be like, well, but that's also how I talk. Like, I do have these tiny little artifacts of New England, like sprinkled through my speech, because that's where I grew up. And my mom has a Rhode Island accent and my grandpa has a Rhode Island accent. And like, that's how, and the people around me speak with that. So like, it's living in there. It's just like, and how much of that do we want to cleanse in, you know, in, yeah, pursuit of this character or this story? And sometimes that might be true, right? Like, maybe I do want to sort of take that out because this character has never been to New England and would never say it that way. But sometimes it's like, how much also do we just leave in because that's just how I talk, you know? And it's such a small thing. People deal with much bigger versions of that. But that was my tiny version recently of getting this huge pickup packet that was just like, you said all these words wrong.
And you're like, well, where I'm from, it's not wrong. You heard it wrong. You misheard it. I didn't missay it. You misheard it.
Or in that authenticity thing, it's so funny. I figured out like a little ways into this. You're like default characters that you fall into, where like every time, like, you know, quick snap judgment, I'm like, oh, here's a small old man character. I have to be an old man. I would like default to my grandfather's voice. And then sometimes I have to pull back and be like, this man would not talk like that. I need to give this man a different old man voice. But I'm like, that's when I think of an old man, I think of my like Rhode Island grandfather and how he spoke. And it's like, well, that's just what comes out. But like, sometimes that can be useful in terms of like, that's what you bring to it. That's the reference you have in your back pocket ready to go, because that's your lived experience.
And so much of like what we have to do is like use those little influences to create things for us, or for the story that work, you know? Like, I'm narrating right now a book that's set in Chicago, and I always love when something's set in the Midwest because I was like, I know those people. And I can let myself go a little bit more because I know, yeah, that like a few of my Midwesternisms might slip in, and it's okay. Because I was hired for this and I'm the right guy, yeah, for this particular thing. Although it's another book where I am being challenged to have like 10 different male voices that are all low and rugged and hoarse and stormy,
shaking your bones, resonating,
shaking my bones. And I guess I'm curious, like, if anybody else had that experience where they were doing something that ultimately you knew was not authentic. It wasn't you. It wasn't your voice. But there was enough positive reinforcement that you were like, do I just keep doing it? Or do I have to consciously make a different choice and introduce the audience to the real me?
Ooh, that's deep. Mm. Ooh.
Mm. I don't know. I feel like I have, like, I don't know, with things like that, I feel like I find my, like, I feel like I have a bone-shaking man somewhere in me, right? Like, that exists within the multitudes that I contain,
yeah.
You know, that all of us, mm-hmm. that all of us contain, right? And I totally feel it, because, listen, there's definitely, I've made vocally straining choices or, like, vocal, you know, things that feel so foreign or are really hard to sustain over a 10-hour book and been like, woof, that was a mistake. So that's incredibly real. But also, like, I don't know that it's, you know, it's like, well, what is my version yes. of the bone-shaking man, and where does he live in my body, in my voice, in my attitude, in my cadence? Like, I think all that stuff lives in us, you know, in some way or another. I don't know.
Yeah, but can I tell you just how that's hitting me? Like, I'm also looking at you and thinking, yeah, but you're a girl. So, like, nobody expects you to have a super low voice. And I just, and again, this was all the shit that's going on in my own head of, like, seeing and hearing other people do their work and just how naturally deep their voice is, and then seeing the reviews and saying how great their performances are, when really what they mean is they have a really low voice, and thinking that the job is to have a really low voice. The job is to match what is successful for other people, which I think is probably the larger conversation that this fits into, right? Like, that feeling that, like, success means matching what other people are doing well. It's why there are, like, there's not one Julia Whalen in our industry. There are dozens. There's not one Scott Brick in our industry. There are dozens. There are people who emulate the most popular narrators.
Yeah, because that's the product that consumers are giving the thumb. So that's like capitalism wins over the art. You know, it's like we know these numbers are tracking, and so we're just going to keep producing the thing that the numbers are showing is selling, and that's going to keep, and that's the little factory of narrators. But hey, we have computers to do that now. So how are we going to make the art? Because, like, can we be brave enough? And it's risky. I think it's risky for everybody involved. Can we be brave enough to stretch the possibility of what could be enjoyed, what could be, you know, taken in? And you're right. It's very easy when that precedent hasn't been set in the same way to be like, I can take that risk because I have way less to lose. Or I'm thinking about the thing that always happens where it's like, she screamed like 8 octaves higher than she was speaking. You're like, no human can do that. You couldn't hear it. Like, what are you talking about? There's all sort of misnomers in the language that's used to describe voices, for sure. But that precedent, that's a separate thing than the precedent that's set of, like, the resonance of this certain pitch of male narrator and romance in particular is the thing that we know that sells to the consumers.
I ain't gonna lie, cause there are a couple, you know, before I started narrating, I fell in love with a
couple. Your bones were shaking, Jillian?
Girl, let me tell you something. And I, the first two voices I fell in love with were Sean Crisden and Sebastian York. And then I begged all my friends for 3 years. I said, if you really love me, find this man and ask him to call me on my birthday, say happy birthday, and tell me what the weather is. That is all I need. And I will smoke 12 cigarettes when
they
it's
have
done.
An app for that now.
Right.
But I said all that to say, but that goes back to us as a community and how we connect with each other, because new people will think that is the only way to get work, is you need to sound like Andy Arndt. You need to sound like CJ Bloom. You need to sound like all of these people. And that is the value of connecting and making connections. So whenever I run into new narrators, I don't really, and I'm going to say this, Andre, and I really, when they ask me how I got started, I tell the cutesy story about conversations, right? And then they ask me other questions. And my immediate thing I say to them is, I believe in connecting with people and I believe in organizations. So things that I do are because, or things that I've done or whatever it is I know is because I've made authentic connections, right? And so even at the narrator retreat last year, it was a couple of publishers that I introduced myself to, and it turned into a joke between me and them. And I said, hey, I'm not coming over here to hump your leg and say, give me a job. I just want to come and like authentically get to know you and let's just have a conversation about whatever. They thought my tennis shoes were cute and I talked about it. I was like, oh, let me tell you where I got them from, kind of thing, which I know is weird, but I don't care. And even I connected with Maria McCann because we were in a four pack for APAC last year, and everyone had, and I felt this pressure, right? And everybody came, we did a Zoom call and everybody came with, I need to find this person, this publisher. And when it came to me, all I said was, I just want to meet like really great people and people I've been seeing on Zoom calls. I want to see them in real life and get to know them. That's my goal. And that's been my goal. And
you and I should have been in the same pack, because I had the same philosophy and I felt shamed for it.
Oh, no.
I did too. And when Maria like,
really?
Found
you don't,
me?
And nothing else? And I was like, no, I'm there to meet all these people who I've never had a chance to meet in real life. Like,
yeah,
I'm there
and
to
when
make
I
friends.
Saw Maria, she hugged me. She said, you took so much pressure off. Mm. And I was like, I didn't know anything else. And then like I met Andre and I wanted to like hug him like I knew him. It's like, who is this black woman from the south hugging me like she knows me? But he's like good people. He's like, have you met blah blah blah?
Yeah.
Let me connect you with blah blah blah. And that is what is beautiful about this community. But I said all that to say, that is why we have got to have those conversations with newbies and say, there's room for you. You don't have to sound like Andy Arndt and CJ Bloom and Sean Crisden and this person and that person, this person. Don't
and
even.
And all
try
of those people
like
would
Andy.
Tell you the same thing.
They would. They, but nobody believes them. It's like, but you sound like you and you get all the accolades and you get all the good work. And so that's BS. I call BS on that. You just don't want me to sound like you and get those jobs.
But here's the other piece in the middle, too, is that when you go to plenty of coaches or when someone says, like, what's the industry kind of like defining audiobook right now? Or what's the sound in the industry right now? Like the Julia Whalens, the Dion Grahams, like establish for a lot of listeners, like what the sound is and ultimately establish for a lot of coaches, like what they're trying to get you to. And so that piece, what I love about that piece about like, just feeling like you want to connect with people is that, yes, it's fantastic to connect with people like producers without the emphasis of like, give me a job. But when there is that connection, they see more of you and they can yes. say, I trust Gail. I don't need to tell her, I don't need to have her audition. I trust Gail with this story. Whatever she's going to send back at me, I know we're going to love. She's going to do great with this book. And similarly, you have to be able to go to, you know, three different coaches, whoever you go to, hear your feedback from each one. And instead of being like, oh, but you're telling me to change this, but that last coach told me to do this, da 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 da. You're taking your little pieces, you're putting together your little toolkit, and you are establishing your own assessment of like what your voice is, what you want to do with text that gets put in front of you. It's not about the sample. It is about your approach, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I understand, I mean, Kurt, because I think I misunderstood your point earlier about like trying to achieve that deep voice for a whole book, because that is the gold standard. That is number one. That is what people want, you know? And that temptation is so strong to try to mimic that, to try to achieve that. And it can feel, you know, frustrating to be like, I'm not, you know, in that vein. But I think there's also so much value and growing value every day as this industry evolves and expands in not being the mainstream choice and not being the mainstream voice and not being the Taylor Swift of audiobook narrators and being the indie artist. Because listen, you know, a lot of people love Taylor Swift and listen to her music and enjoy it. And she's extremely popular and very successful. Great. But also like for that weird kid, you know, who's like struggling through high school, that the that indie artist who sings a little differently and sounds a little weird and has a different perspective means so much more to them and connects so much more deeply with them. Like, we don't want to have a homogenous landscape where everybody sounds the same. Like, of course, Julia Whalen and Sebastian York and Emily Wu, all these narrators we've named, sound incredible. And we love listening to their voices and we celebrate them. But God forbid, I would hate to be in an industry where 100% of the people sounded exactly like them. I would be so bored. I would be
also,
so bored.
A lot of these folks we're mentioning have been doing this for a very long time. And I promise if you go back and listen to their first few audiobooks, they do not sound as the way we think of them now. So to answer your question, Kurt, like, even those icons have transformed. And to go with your musician analogy, Lindsay, like, you know, I was a Phoebe Bridgers fan before there was a generation of Boy Genius fans, like a long time ago. And I think, so to have this faith that if you're doing something really good and you're making really good art and you're being true to yourself and you can stay in the game, maybe the fan base will change. Maybe the consumership will change and evolve and stretch and grow. And there'll be more space, as you say, Jillian, like, there will be space for all. There's a room enough for all of us. We just have to be brave enough to put the thing out there for people to receive.
Okay, so here's my question, though. How many, to kind of take a toe into your comment, Kurt, is how many narrators, and I'm going to go just the male narrators, really, I'm going to say it, aren't that talented, but it's just about the timbre of their voice. Mm-hmm. They really can't deliver a stellar story, a product that you feel as if you have been on a transformative journey. And it really is just, tell me the time and the weather and I am going to love it. Mm-hmm. So how much of it is
how many?
Night, everybody.
See y'all tomorrow.
Am I talking about the pink elephant?
Yeah.
Man?
Yeah. I mean, I have encountered some. I
sipping her tea.
This is what I'll say to that. And it's, have any of you, I know Andre has anybody else read or listened to Julia Whalen's Thank You for Listening?
Oh, most I know what you're going to reference.
I have not finished it.
So the whole conceit of that book is that, like, a narrator falls in love with another narrator, and they end up in a recording studio together recording this project. And it gets to the point where she's in the room with this very popular narrator. And basically has to say to him, but what if we tried acting? And to me, it was such a vindication of some of a lot of my very big feelings for the last 7 years of, like, but what if we tried acting? And it wasn't just about the voice.
Can I ask you, Kurt, like, after thinking that and being brave enough to do that and having this change, making this change, like, do you feel any doubt that that was the right choice? Or do you ever go like, oh, I wish I was still doing that? Or am I missing work that I want?
No,
like,
my story has a very happy ending.
Good.
Because I made a conscious decision to just start ignoring low voice, deep voice, gravelly voice. And to embrace the idea that as a male, I have a lower voice than most of the female writers who write these books. And so to them, my voice is already low.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to stick with
that. It's all relative. Oh. Yeah.
And then I just worry about character choices. Beyond that, I don't worry about how they describe the pitch of a voice. Lots of other things that they write I take into consideration, but I worry about the character instead of
the... Right, because who's to say what's gruff for you is gruff for me?
Right. And who wants to listen to that in their earbuds?
Yeah.
A truly, like, gravelly voice? Who would
Jillian
want to listen
does.
To that
Jillian
for
does.
8 hours? Well, again, it probably depends on what your definition is. But, and the great part is as I made that transition, nobody said a word.
Mm.
Nobody's come back
this.
With like, oh, wait, could you make the voice lower? Or the reviews have maintained exactly what they always were. It turns out nobody cared about the fact that I was artificially lowering my voice. Yeah. And they were just happy with the rest of what I was doing.
Let me ask you and Andre this question. Do you think the entry point into this business is easier for a man that may have that quintessential voice that is deep and gravelly but has no talent?
I think any man has an easier entrance point into this industry than any woman or non-binary or trans person. I think just being a man makes your life a lot easier. And I do think there are still people who are attracted to the quality of a voice over the actor. So I think you still can get into this industry without having an acting background or any sort of acting natural talent. I think it's getting harder. I think the listening audience is becoming more savvy.
And discerning.
I was going to say, maybe it's also just like a narrower acting scope, right? It's like, I have this really beautiful voice and I can seduce. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, and like other colors, no, not yet, but I can do this one thing and that is mm-hmm. enough to like pay my mortgage right. every month,
even,
you know?
even that, just to be able to seduce, because I've heard some voices where it's like, they sound so bored and they are talking about some very non-boring activities, but they sound so bored.
I'm putting my little DEI hat on and I'm doing a call-in for these narrators because I feel like, I think that there is something really beautiful happening in audiobooks. I think this conversation feels timely, like I said, in the context of AI. It feels timely in a post-pandemic narrator swell world mm-hmm. where most major publishers are looking for performances. When you hear producers on Clubhouse or coaching or Dion Masterclasses or whatever it is, they're looking for characters. They're looking for choices. They're not just looking for qualities of voices. And it feels like an opportunity for someone to look at their own work and say, what is my connection to this? Why do I feel so distant from this character that's like been written or created? Because what we do is such a marathon. And for someone who shows up in a booth for 40 hours and does, for lack of a better phrase, phone it in, you know, with the baritones or like whatever it might be, like just phones
that
it in.
That was impressive.
I need to
Not
go
sustainable
get my
though. I really feel like someone hired you for this job. Let this be an opportunity for like introspection about the text, about the performance. Like use this as an outlet. Let this be a place for you to like connect with a listener. Like Kurt said, like these are not boring things that are happening, right? In these books, in these stories. And it's not always just like sexually not boring. Like a lot of romance has really beautiful emotional explorations. Characters are developing and growing. And I'm so interested in seeing what people haven't unlocked in themselves yet. Right. Mm. I want to believe that the kind of narrator that we're talking about has space for those things. Yeah.
I think that is a great place to bring the conversation to a close. This conversation, at least, because we could continue to talk about this for a long time. I think there's another really interesting conversation to have after this, which is, what about once you figure out who you are? How do you tell other people about it?
Yeah.
How do you sell yourself? I think that's a conversation we'll need to have at some point in the future. Yeah. But for now, thank you guys so much for sharing your thoughts and your experiences and being vulnerable. Thank you, Jillian, especially for joining us. We're so grateful to have your perspective.
This has been fabulous, and maybe I'll get invited back.
Oh, yeah.
I have a very good feeling about it.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Thank you so much.
It has truly been fabulous.
Thank you. The Narrator Roundtable is produced and hosted by Andre Santana, Deanna Anthony, Gail Shallon, Kurt Graves, and Lindsay Dorcas. All copywritten material is shared with permission. Music and sound effects are licensed through Storyblocks Audio. All opinions shared are those of the individuals and do not reflect the positions or policies of any company or organization with which they happen to be associated.